It's time for the food maven, Arthur Schwartz. Food maverick, food amazer. Hello, Arthur.
Hello, everyone. Today's episode is brought to you by a headline I used when I was the food editor of the New York Daily News. We published a 32, even sometimes 40-page food section every week. And so you really had to plummet to the depths of any subject to fill up all those pages. That's how it goes, folks. We had to fill up the space around the ads. Anyway, I once did a section called You Never Have Too Many Chicken Recipes. Today it comes under that category. However, it was so popular that we had to, the next week, do a section called Parts 2, T-W-O, in a section of the newspaper that was called Part Roman Numeral 2. So it was a joke. Anyway, I must say, Arthur Schwartz here, who cooks nearly every day, I still don't have enough chicken recipes. Oh, you know, it's because it just gets... it's not so boring to eat my plain chicken, but it's boring to make, and some days I want a little bit more of a challenge. For instance, well, let me say that my daily chicken, so to speak, is what my go-to chicken are chicken thighs, which I roast in the oven, 450 degrees, usually only 40 minutes, unless they're gigundo, which may be 45 minutes. I just salt, pepper, a brush of olive oil, and they get really crispy. They will get less crispy as they stand, but I still like them at room temperature or blah, blah. But that's skin on chicken thighs.
Yum.
Yeah, I say yum. By the way, I even like the skinless chicken thighs, which I don't cook the same way at all. I put them on my ridged grill when the grill is smoking hot, and I, with salt and pepper, you don't need any oil, salt and pepper on the both sides of the chicken thighs. They usually take 5 minutes per side, and then I flip it for 1 minute more on each side, and that's that.
Also
and,
yum.
Yeah, very yum. I like that too. Another way I do them, I do them lately. I've only done it twice, but it really is a good way, is put your chicken thighs skin side down in a cold, meaning, you know, not heated yet, black iron skillet. Don't crowd them in a skillet. In my big skillet, I can actually fit 5, maybe even 6 thighs. You know, if you can only do 4 at a time, 4 at a time is fine anyway. Put them over high heat in the cold skillet, and as soon as you see some chicken fat rendering out of the skin, lower the heat to, I would say, medium-low even, and cook them on skin side down only for about at least 15 minutes. And then cover the pan, and you're not turning them, but cover the pan so that the underside gets cooked by the hot steam. And that's it. The whole thing should not take more than 25 minutes. And you're going to get super crispy skin and really juicy meat.
And really, the only thing that you have to remember is to use a potholder.
Yeah, that's true. Uh-huh. Well, that's funny you should mention because, you know, I make potholders.
Well, funny, except that I've done this before, so it's not.
Yeah. No, you know, I became obsessive about it. So I have a big shopping bag full of beautiful potholders that I've made, and I've saturated my market. So I stopped doing it. Anyway, so given all these ways that you can cook chicken just plain, something got into me. I know what got into me. I poached a chicken. But what got into me was that Bob and I are suddenly enamored of curried chicken salad. So in England, do you know about this?
Yeah.
It's called coronation salad. Have we talked about it before?
Yeah, we've talked about it, and it recently had, you know, in the last couple of years, it was not just for Jubilee, but because there was a new coronation, we had new coronation chicken salad.
Yeah, well, it was a chicken salad invented for a tea given to Queen Elizabeth II, and the recipe was created by, I never remember their names, but they were two women who worked at the Cordon Bleu in London. The famous French cooking school has had a London outpost for, I don't know, 70 years, 80 years. So they were very popular at that time, too. And it's really, I mean, the salad has been bastardized in all different ways, but the original one is a curried mayonnaise, although it depends on some accounts. Some say mayonnaise and creme fraiche, but I don't know why the Brits would be using creme fraiche. They would be using a Devonshire cream or some really thick, wonderful cream like that, and mayonnaise and curry powder. Of course, the Queen was also the Empress of India, and the India was extremely important at that time. It was a new independent, I shouldn't say independent, it was still part of the Commonwealth, but it was a democracy. Anyway, it's a curry chicken salad. I make it, and when we were, I was surprised to see that in England today, I mean, we were just there last year, and you go into a sandwich shop and they invariably have a coronation chicken salad sandwich, of which I had two, and I had it somewhere else on a plate. So I got a little taste of what the Brits actually do with this. The original recipe also had minced dried apricots and almonds, slivered almonds. I've been making it with walnuts because I prefer walnuts to almonds, no other reason, and I always have walnuts in the house. And I make it with grapes,
right,
instead of apricots. A fresh, sweet grape cut in half. The other day, however, I needed to use up a couple of apples that had been sitting around like a day too long, but they were still certainly edible. I diced up apple instead of the grape. Now, this sounds familiar. It's like it was all over the U.S. 40 years ago, right?
Right.
Curried chicken salad?
Oh, yeah.
It was a thing. Anyway, so because we like this, and because I don't like, by the way, rotisserie chickens anymore, they're invariably, the breast is so dry you don't want to eat it. The thigh and drumstick may be okay, but it's a half a chicken you got to deal with it you don't really want to eat. I ended up always, when I bought these, to make chicken salad. But, you know, why buy a chicken for whatever price that is when I could buy it for half of whatever the price is and literally cook it myself in 5 minutes it takes? So if you poach the chicken, I'm not roasting. I do roast chickens. I usually roast them butterflied or spatchcocked. Yeah. And I do that myself. It's very easy with my little kitchen scissors. I just zip down the one side of and the other side of the back, and I put the back on the baking sheet with the rest of the chicken because that's my share. When it comes out of the oven, that's just like all crispy skin and juicy back meat. So I do that. But the other day I decided our chicken salad would be better if I poached the chicken, and it was a huge success. So I had been poaching chicken my whole cooking life, which is most of it. It's funny. If you came from an Eastern European Jewish household, there was always chicken soup for Shabbos, or at least and certainly for a holiday, and chicken soup, you know, for everything, actually. So we always had chicken soup around, and then there was always what my grandmother or my mother would call the soup chicken, which was the chicken that flavored the chicken soup. Now, they did not make what today is called bone broth. They did not make a chicken broth that is so cooked you wouldn't want to eat the meat at the They made a good broth with the whole chicken. And by the way, it's still very hard to get these days, but it was either an old hen or a larger chicken, a larger, older chicken. So it could cook quite a while and give off its flavor to the broth, and you still had something that was edible. My father loved soup chicken.
Can we talk for 1 second about chicken in a pot?
Well, except that it's cooked out more.
I just remember for my dad ordering it.
Chicken in the pot, of course.
Cats or something? No.
Yeah, a boiled chicken.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I made it the other day because it was easy and blah, blah. And it's 3-pound chicken, enough water to cover it, bring it to a boil. As soon as it comes to a boil, lower it to a simmer, to a gentle simmer. And I did 10 minutes. I don't know why I did this. I was experimenting. That's why I did it. But I did 10 minutes on one side and 10 minutes on the other side. I turned it. And then I covered the pot and let it stand for an hour and a half. Now, I used to cook chicken in using this Chinese method, and it was similar. You bring the chicken bring the chicken to a boil until you see steam coming out from underneath the cover. Turn off the heat and let it stand 3 hours. So I don't know. It seemed to me that it didn't really need 3 hours, but it did. if I did it that way. So I won't do it that way again. I'll go back to my old way, which is basically about 40 minutes, turning the chicken once or twice. Of course, the breast meat doesn't require as much cooking as the thigh meat, so the leg and thighs should get more time. And then you're going to have really delicious meat and thin broth, not a great broth. It's a good cooking broth. It's not what I would consider soup broth. You know, I wouldn't just eat it for its own sake in a bowl or even in a cup. I mean, it's delicious, but it's very subtle. It's not like a really good broth. But you could make it into a really good broth depending on what you want to do with the chicken itself. You let the chicken cool enough to handle it, and I stripped everything off the bones, everything. And the skin came off first. I tossed that. I did that. I was thinking I might do something with it, but I didn't. You could, in fact, render it more and get some chicken fat out of it, but I threw it away. I took all the meat off, and I did not throw... I mean, I threw the bones away, but if I wanted a better broth, I would have taken all the bones and put them back in the broth and let that simmer for another hour with a half teaspoon of vinegar, just the tiniest bit of acidity, which apparently helps draw out the collagen and I guess also maybe calcium from the bones, and let it cook. And then you're going to have a decent broth. To me, they're separate things, and I was happy to have my thinner broth anyway. So what do you do with this meat? It's boiled chicken, as Jill just said. My mother would put it under the broiler somehow, and I think she just must have just brushed a little oil on the skin and put it under the broiler until the skin got brown. My father liked it. I don't recall what he ate it with. For me, one of the best things to eat with it would be a green sauce, like an Italian-style salsa verde, which is to say parsley. I do this in my mini processor. Parsley, a whole bunch of parsley. You can save the stems for a broth, but the tops only and fine stems only in your little mini processor. Or I've never done this in a blender. Isn't going to chop the same way. You could do it by hand, though, for sure, with a sharp knife. And then in the processor would go, I would say, a tablespoon of capers. If they're the salted capers, rinse them off, and you don't have to soak them because you want the salt in the sauce. And you could just rinse off the salt, rinse them, and put them in your processor. If they're the kind of capers that are packed in vinegar, drain them and also rinse them and put them in the... You need a little vinegar here anyway, so that's okay. Put that in. A large clove of garlic. If you don't love garlic, a small clove of garlic. And if you do love garlic, you can go as far as 2 cloves of garlic. Then I would say about for this whole bunch of parsley, a half a cup of olive oil. And now this is definitely an optional ingredient, but I always put at least one, if not more, anchovies in this. Mr. Harned he doesn't like anchovies. However, he loves Caesar salad, which I put a lot of anchovies, and he loves this. He doesn't even know there are anchovies in it. He just knows he likes it. So don't be afraid of anchovies, except there are some really funky anchovies out there. I always buy Sicilian anchovies. As I'm old, so the names are escaping me, but there are two brands out there everywhere, and it come in oil in little jars and larger jars. And if you go to an Italian market, you might even get them under salt, which is a great way to buy them if you can find them. They're not packed in oil. You rinse them off. They have no heads, but they have tails. But you rinse them off, and you can fillet them with your thumbs and fingers, just split them in half, take the bone out, throw that away, and the anchovies are, really they are, I have to say, sweeter than ones in the jar. But if you get a good brand in the jar, they're good, certainly for this. So all together in the food processor, you've got parsley, garlic, oil, capers, perhaps an anchovy, and grind it all up until it's, and I said about a half a cup of oil, until it's a paste, like a pesto. Huh. You know, in fact, speaking of pesto, you could, in fact, eat boiled chicken with pesto. That would not be a bad thing.
Sure.
Give me that and some crusty bread. I'd probably be very happy. That's my salsa verde. Sometimes I make a little different one with maybe a piece of stale bread, old dry bread, throw that into the processor, and add a little vinegar. Sometimes we want it vinegary, sometimes we don't want it vinegary. Anyway, this is a very good sauce for any kind of boiled meat, but you're not boiling meat every day, but you might boil a chicken. By the way, the broth that results from just cooking the chicken, I said, is a very nice cooking broth. But the broth that I usually make, and in fact, as we speak, I have on the stove, I would call bone broth. Now, I never would have called it bone broth until that became a marketing term fairly recently. I don't know when bone broth became a popular term. If you're in your 20s, you probably never knew. You always knew bone broth, though. So bone broth is broth that is rich in collagen, which makes the broth gel. So even at room temperature, it might be quite jellied. My bone broth is very jellied, and what I have on the stove is 7 pounds from my butcher of chicken backs. Thank God, whomever. A lot of people like boneless chicken breasts.
Right.
So
and also
butcher,
a lot of people like, by the way, you know, getting bone broth is always a, it's a thing up here, and you usually
it's
can't
a thing.
It. Yeah.
It's a thing everywhere, Jill.
No, I know it's everywhere, you know. But it's something that used to be, you didn't need, because of what you're talking about way back when, you didn't need bone broth. Now you need bone broth.
Well, you know, bone broth is very restorative. I have nothing.
Of course, I've got nothing bad to say about bone broth. I've got everything good to say.
I don't, you know, I've never bought a box of bone broth,
right,
although I see it in the supermarket.
Because you just make soup.
It's, well, to me, it must, I don't know, it's got to pour out of those boxes. My bone broth, when, well, actually, those are room temperature anyway. I don't know.
Right.
You know, I like, right now, I am really enjoying the aroma of my broth on the stove. It's just perking away. Seven pounds of backs will probably result in at least 5 quarts of really good bone broth in the end. So after I put, by the way, these were all frozen, but I put them in my big pot anyway, covering them with cold water. By the time it came to a nice simmer, I was able to separate the frozen together backs using a big two-prong fork. It worked very well. And as soon as, and at that point, I'm getting scum coming to the top, really ugly gray schmutz. That means dirt in Yiddish.
Scum?
Pardon me?
I said scum.
Scum. Yeah, I don't like that word very much.
Okay.
But anyway, you know, it was what little boys used to call each other.
Right, okay.
Yeah. So anyway, I do skim. That's the only work involved here, is that when this schmutz comes to the top, you got to get it off. So I have this utensil. I've mentioned this many times on the air, I'm sure, because I do this all the time. It's a great utensil. That is a very fine strainer in what is a skimmer kind of shape. So you can really skim the top of the pot. It's curved on one end, the opposite handle from the handle, and it really works very well. So when the foam is white and no longer disgusting, you can then add salt. I added, I guess, about, so this is all this big pot of stuff. I ordered maybe 1 tablespoon of salt. Who knows what I'll probably have to add more later. We'll see. I don't know. I just did the palm of my handful of whole peppercorns. So it must have been about, I'm saying 15 peppercorns. 3 cloves. I don't bother sticking them in the onion as everybody always does because I'm skimming them out in the end anyway. So I put in 3 cloves. What else? And, you know, my carrot. I had 2 big carrots, cut into 3 pieces, and 3 big stalks of celery, each one washed, of course, and then cut into 3 pieces. This also fits in the pot nicely. Make it 4 pieces if your pot accommodates. And an onion, a medium-sized onion, peeled and cut in half. What else? That's it. And now it'll bubble away. This is bone broth, remember. It'll bubble away now for at least 5 or 6 hours. And you may have to actually add some water as it goes because you want to keep everything covered. Everything can be skimmed out, filtered out, re-seasoned later. Just let it perk away. I mean, try to find a place on your stove where it just goes real slow all day. And by the way,
do you put a flame thinger under
a flame tamer?
Flame tamer, that's it. Not thinger.
I have one, but I don't need it here.
Okay.
My new stove goes super low.
Okay.
And has different size. On the new stove, I don't need it. Although, wait, come to think of it, I did use it recently. The flame tamer, that is. Because I was making a pot in a clay pot of beans, and I wanted them to go really slow. And I don't know why I didn't trust it to my stove, but I didn't. It's very handy, so I do have one. And you know, I have one from the days when I was making Neapolitan ragu all the time, and on a different stove where it was hard to keep it at a low simmer. That's what those are for. I have more than one kind of those, too. The American kind, which is 2 sheets of, like a hollow pad of aluminum, which, by the way, after copper is the best conductor of heat. And the one that I have, which is iron, which is a lesser conductor of heat, but fine for this purpose. And it's and that's I bought in Italy 1,000 years ago. Anyway, so we're gonna have you know what we do with this? I mean, the bone broth is not is really for eating, you know, for a meal. So when I can get good fresh pasta. I like that, tortellini especially, tortellini in brodo. Lately, I've been just cooking these kosher-style egg noodles, which we always called, does this sound familiar, Jill? Lakshin?
I don't know.
Oh, well, Lakshin pudding was a big thing for me as a kid, which is basically a noodle pudding made with fine egg noodles. So there are several kinds of Lakshin Kugel. But Lakshin in soup is just these fine egg noodles. By the way,
those really skinny ones?
The really fine egg noodles.
Right, okay.
Right. They cook very quickly. And the brand that I buy are taste eggy. So they're really good noodles for just having for noodle's sake in soup. But there are other noodles that you can buy that are great in soup. I was amused by this, but I had three great nieces staying with us this weekend, not alone, but with parents. And the thing that they're all into is ramen. This is 10-year-olds.
Right.
Huh. And by the way, they don't live like around the corner from three ramen places.
No, I mean, and as long as they're not using the seasoning, they're great. I don't know, actually.
What seasoning?
When you get packaged ramen, which hopefully
no, I'm talking about real.
Yeah, I understand.
No, they're into real ramen, not packaged ramen.
Real ramen's good. We just have to add.
By the way, I mean those packaged ramen is a great way to get noodles. you don't have to use their seasoning.
That's right.
So my bone broth with ramen noodles, a package of ramen noodles instead of the seasoning, and then add some. I don't know, sliced scallion, grate a little ginger in it maybe, snow peas cook very quickly, little peas cook very quickly.
Put to lime?
I mean, you really can be creative.
Yeah,
you can be very creative. But don't be creative with your... with your bone broth. I can already hear somebody saying, doesn't he use dill, doesn't he use parsley, blah, blah, blah. Mm. I put in some celery leaves, but I find that fresh greens give the soup a green tint that I do not like if you cook the greens from the beginning. So if I want to have like an old-fashioned chicken soup like my grandmother might give me, I would love to have dill in it. So I would just snip some dill over it before I serve it. By the way, I mean, the old-fashioned Eastern European chicken soup, besides having some greens, also had parsley root, parsnip.
Right.
And my grandmother always, from the kitchen was next to the dining area, she would always call out and say, "Who wants the vegetables?" Not everybody wanted.
But I remember that as well. And you know, it's going way back to my grandmother. And the reason I say way back is because we've often joked about how my mother was an indifferent cook. But that always the chicken soup was not just drop some chicken and some water in the pot.
No, I mean, on rare occasion, go to one of the live chicken markets here in Brooklyn to get an old hen to make chicken soup, and the smell is different. The taste is different. So I always say the recipes have not changed,
but I wonder if the taste
ingredients
of the hen is
also
different now based on the feed and the this and the that.
You mean with the chickens?
I'm talking about if you go and get a live hen now.
Yeah.
And the live hen that you had, if your mother went and got one.
Oh,
I imagine that just the taste.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, I agree. But that's closer than when I use a. Well, the chickens that I'm cooking now, the backs that I'm cooking, they're a brand. They're a name brand chicken that my butcher sells, but they're just a name brand chicken. I must say they're not the mass produced name brand chicken. They're not the worst. I'm not going to mention the name, but you know, there are some chicken I won't buy. This is a company I like. All right, my dear.
All right.
Bye.
We will talk to you. We will talk to you, the food maven, the next opportunity we get. Thank you very much, Arthur Schwartz
from
Robin Hood Radio.